Siren Radio.
Splendid. Absolutely amazing. And just wonderful. Welcome to the Madrid Drive for Wednesday, November the 21st. We've got a quintet of quality in the studio. It's unbelievable the kind of range we've actually got. We've got Ben Lewis. Yay, Ben!
Hello.
We've also got the joyous sounds of Kira Alsbrook back with us. How are you, Kira?
Hi, I'm good, thank you.
We had a birthday special all prepared for you a fortnight ago, but of course you went elsewhere. Never mind.
Sorry.
That's okay. It's all right. With next year. We've also got returning, because the events team, frankly, is just that stronger whenever they say. Natalie from Events is in the house. How are you, Natalie?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Excellent. We've got Bethany Gulliver back with us. How are you, Bethany?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine, as I just said a few seconds ago. Please read the script. And as we also mentioned, we've got the awesomely wonderful soul who's making a debut on the programme today. Beverly Spencer's with us. How are you, Beverly?
Alex, very good,
wonderful.
Thank you.
Beverly's a level one student, so is Kira. It makes you feel somewhat chronologically gifted in many ways, Bethany, being a level three, but like Ben.
No,
it's experientially enhanced as well. Isn't that right, Anna Lewis, in London? How are you?
Absolutely. A bit better than I was.
Good, because you a bit like Eva McDonald this week, are under the weather. Sorry, Eva, get well soon. But in a sense, Ben gives a sigh of relief because at least he gets a chair now, which is great, because, you know, thinking, you know, there's no Eva McDonald. I can at least have a chair to sit on after having sorted out the headphones and all the rest of the bits and pieces. He takes one for the team every single week, this man. It's great. So where are you this week, Anna Lewis?
Well, it's the waiting room of the A&E at West Middlesex Hospital. That's where I am right now.
You get to all the glamorous places.
I get
around. You can't just leave the listener hanging like that. I mean, you know, people will actually say, you know, you're in the waiting room of an A&E. Is it something you've done? Can you talk about it?
No,
what's the situation?
Yeah, it's not me. It's my son. He's got quite bad eczema and it's really flared up today. So the doctor couldn't see him, so recommended a walk-in clinic, which is here at the A&E department of West Middlesex Hospital, and there's a long wait. So we've been here about an hour and a half, 2 hours already, but quite how long we have to wait now is anyone's guess, really.
Well, you know what to say, Anna. You just say, you do realise I'm a regular correspondent for Siren Radio in the East Midlands. I don't think they'd look very favourably upon this. Use the power of the media. Would you like to have a few words with a Level 1 student who is actually reading the subject of journalism and creative writing? That would be Beverly Spencer.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I said that as well. Oh, wow. Journalism and creative writing. I mean, one, by any, but both together. It's frankly outrageous. Anna? It's time for you to quiz Beverly about life, the universe, and what it's like when you make the ultimate sacrifice of giving up bingo for the Madrid Drive. Whoa.
I haven't given it up. I'm going later.
There we go.
Get your priorities right, that's what I say. No, it's. I guess creative writing and journalism are an interesting combination because, as we know, with what our friend Donald Trump calls fake news, there's quite an opportunity to be very creative in how one presents the news. And it's true, if you look at old newspapers, it's interesting the style of reporting. So I hope you find your own unique style for any journalism that you carry out.
Yes, so do I, Anna. It seems very contradicting at the minute, though, because we are very structured when we write an article or a feature.
They drill you very hard, the journalism tutors, though. This, follow that through, tell it to what it's all about. It's quite frightening in many ways. By the way, I just want to point out for the benefit of the listener that when Anna referred to our friend Donald Trump, it's not necessarily echoing the views of the station. I mean, I'm sure Natalie would be in a bit of panic, really, if you said, yeah, Donald, how's it hanging, my man, and so on. Yeah, we've seen like all presidents of the United States, some more than others. So describe the scene, Anna, because it does sound as though you're reporting from a war scene there with children sort of, you know. I mean, I know it's London, but surely we've moved beyond Dickensian London there, where you've actually got children sort of crying, desperately seeking attention.
I just think that journalism today is a tricky, it's a minefield. I took a lesson with a group of A-level students on the style of newspaper writing, and from a young person's perspective, it's very interesting what they see. And I have to say, life experience makes you read articles in a quite a different way. You become extremely cynical. You wonder who the newspaper editor is. You wonder what the agenda is. You wonder what's backing the newspaper. You know, there's a whole kind of agenda going on that as an A-level English student, you're not aware of.
That is so true. And also the way you seamlessly actually avoided the question that I actually originally put to you was fantastic. You know, forget the whole issue. Natalie, any thoughts from yourself about waiting rooms in A&E or indeed, have you got any advice you'd like to put as an events person? Just talk to Anna. You know, give her some hope, for goodness sakes.
I just have to take a good book if I'm ending up in A&E.
Right, and speak on microphone.
Oh,
that's all right.
Just,
exactly, it's the way forward.
Definitely just take a good book with you.
Right.
And avoid anyone coughing in your direction.
Very good.
Or change for the vending machine.
Nice. Triple whammy. Change for the vending machine. Avoid anybody coughing in your general direction.
Yeah.
And take a good book with you.
Yeah.
Well, there we are. Those are our thoughts of advice, and we wish you and your son all the very best, Anna. It's going to be splendid. Have you had a recently interesting telephonic link with us from the A&E department?
Have indeed. Thank you.
Marvellous. And will you be back again next week?
I would love to. Thanks very much indeed.
And starry eyes have caught me crying. You don't die of a broken heart. You just lie down and give up trying. And it's gonna be a long night, all night. It's such a long
you've already heard the advice. You need to avoid people coughing in your general direction, take a book, and of course have change for the vending machine. Those are the thoughts of Natalie, and Natalie's advice is well worth taking. Isn't that right?
I believe so.
I don't believe it is fact, Kids from Fane. And it's going to be a long night. Well, time is an illusion at the best of times. And as far as we're concerned in life in general...
William Coles, romantic novelist, political journalist, and regular midweek drive correspondent from the capital of Scotland, with or without his prehistoric shark's teeth.
Beverly, you may be interested in the whole notion of the prehistoric shark's teeth that we were referring to there. And in fact, actually, I still don't think, Ben, I've kept my promise to actually show you the official prehistoric shark's tooth. That,
you haven't. We've discussed it probably a
many
handful
a time.
Of times now.
You've
yeah.
been in the office, you've been up in my office, etc.
I feel like it's a repeat feature.
Yeah, you must sort of say, Alex, when you're sort of next to me about a dissertation or other thing, you must say, Alex, what about William's shark's tooth?
Top of the agenda,
exactly. What, right. Where's William Coles' shark's tooth? It's that's the essential thing. And then I will reveal it, William, on your behalf, basically, to actually show the actual shark's tooth, whether or not you've actually got the teeth with you in plural. Do you still have them, by the way?
Me?
Yes.
Of course I do.
Good.
Yeah, I've got,
good.
I buy them by the kilo.
Excellent.
I've got thousands of them.
Very good. And they're all prehistoric?
Yeah, they're all fossilised. Yes, they're 50 million years old. From the halfway up the Atlas Mountains in Morocco.
Splendid. Which is the way forward. Now, as a journalist, formerly, of course, working for News International, I was quite shocked indeed, to find your latest Facebook update, in which, of course, we need to congratulate William on this next thing. He was very, very excited, and he was highly excited. Why, William? Why were you in particular so excited about this little thing that we've got the entire Midweek Drivette team now, Beverly Spencer, Kira Allsbrook, Ben Lewis, Natalie and Bethany Gulliver, all kind of agog, quite literally, to find out why you were excited, in fact so excited you put this on your Facebook page. So what has happened?
I managed to tick a very small thing off my bucket list. I got a letter in the Times. Big thrill.
Yeah, once again, proof that Midweek Drives can have that influential people in the great thunder itself. William Coles has got a letter in the Times. I know. It's just crazy. It's crazy. And pray tell, what...
Steady on. Are you not overdoing it?
No. Hyperbole in the Midweek Drive. Outrageous. Would you like to share with us, William, what this letter was about and how it might even have been truncated to some extent?
No, it wasn't truncated. It was only two sentences long as I wrote it. It was about the phrase going up to London. Or going down to London. And generally, if you're going to the capital, you go up to the capital. That's whether you're coming from the Midlands or from Cornwall. You go up to London. And that's what I always used to say. And then I moved to Scotland and discovered that the Scots take great offence if you say, I'm going up to London. And so now, because I'm so mild-mannered, I say, I'm going down to London.
Now, being that we're in the East Midlands, kind of gives it away, really, in terms of our views on this. But let's do a little straw poll. Natalie, up to Scotland, down to London, up to London, down to Scotland, down to Edinburgh. Where would you pitch it?
Oh, I feel like I'm on the spot now.
You are.
I'd say up to Scotland, down to London.
Up to Scotland, down to London, up to Edinburgh, down to London. Bethany?
Yeah, same, probably. Down to London, for sure.
Lord knows what the Ilkeston correspondent's going to say, but, you know, it's always going to be a surprise and a delightful one. In any case, Kira, what's your view?
I don't know. I don't say either, if I'm honest.
Either.
I'm
going to London.
Yeah. I don't really think going to London or going to Scotland.
Okay. We'll hold Beverly for a moment, but Ben, your thoughts?
Yeah, I didn't think it was any other way other than down or...
Well, I suppose in Brighton everything's up for you.
Really. Apart from the Isle of Wight.
Exactly. You know, there's a message there. And Gibraltar, of course. Okay, Beverly, are you from Lincolnshire originally?
Yeah.
So where do you pitch this then?
The same as Kira. I just going to London, to Edinburgh, without the up and down.
Right. Well, it's quite interesting in terms of the response that actually generated. And it proves that when it comes to the life of Bill Coles, it's far more interesting than Brexit negotiations. Actually, on another congratulatory thing, I see that you've also been taking the West Highland Way. So go on. 15 years ago, when we were still doing the Midweek Drive, you walked over 50 miles in a day, this time only 15.
Mm. Yes, there was a ridiculous race that used to take place in the middle of the summer on the West Highland Way, 50 miles in a day. It was grueling, and only mad people did it. Now, thankfully, it's finished.
Right. Do you not get a hankering? I mean, 15 seems a bit low, really, in a day. Really. I mean, yes. Well, Natalie, you know the clock about 25 miles just going from campus to campus, don't you? Really?
This is on an open day.
Right, exactly. Course, yeah. It's constant flow from that point of view. Okay, that actually is your cue, Bill, to actually talk with Natalie about what exciting things are coming up, including, another open day, a week on Saturday, December the 1st, which I will be attending, rather than actually going to Sci-Fi in Manchester, where I could have actually met Dee Wallace and Henry and Elliot from E.T. I know, it's a sacrifice I'm making for the actual thing. Hopefully, you're going to tell Bill now it's much more exciting than that could ever have actually been.
Of course it is.
Exactly.
Okay, well, give us your best thing, and tell us what your toughest sell is as well. You know, the thing that you dread having to pitch to people.
Mm. I don't dread. I like talking about our events. It's great fun. Every single one.
Well, that's quite a bit of dead air, which is quite nice.
Yeah.
Pause.
Okay.
So there's nothing negative at all about it at all. You're destined for PR, I sense.
Oi.
I didn't like that one. No, we do have a lot going on our 1st of December open day, so it's our penultimate open day of this season. It's our final Saturday open day as well. So we have all of campus open down at the Brayford campus, as far as the Joseph Banks Laboratories, right across to the Minerva building. We are also offering a free city bus tour of Lincoln, which you can only get at the University of Lincoln open days. So if anything, that's worth coming for.
Kira, in a sense, I feel as though we lived each and every single second of your open day with you in terms of applicants' open days, in terms of switching from one thing to the other. Do you have any memories of the open day?
Yeah, it was quite hectic. But no, it was good. I mean, the little workshops and things. But, I mean, I only went to the Minerva, which is where all the little stores were, and then to the... Which other building? No, actually, it was just the Minerva building. But yeah, it was good. It was interesting.
Okay. Beverly, can you cast your mind back all those months ago to when you sort of thought...
Yes, I actually did the free bus tour. We went all around Lincoln. It was brilliant.
And that's as a Lincolnshire lass as well?
Yeah.
Were you there just to check up on them? Like, excuse me, I think you'll find that the cathedral wasn't built in 1826.
I was fact-checking.
Yeah. See, every so often, as we've found, Natalie, we sometimes have people who sneak in. We found with Rory McGowan that actually he didn't attend an open day officially, but he came along on a non-open day just to see what was really going on.
I like that idea.
Yeah. Bethany, can you remember that far back? I mean, I know it's, as a third year, clearly it's the open day. So long ago.
I barely remember. Open days are always good, I think. They give you a proper sense of what it's actually like, because you can see all the information online, but nothing compares to actually being
tangible.
Yeah,
you reach out
exactly.
And touch people, allegedly. Bill, you'd be delighted to know that we've got another cause of celebration in the studio, because Natalie has actually... Natalie has brought a pyramid along with her. It's the power of the pyramid, because she has been this very day to an August event, which I think you need to share with the team, Natalie, but please.
Not a November event.
So what you did there, nicely done, and I appreciate that, because that's the kind of writing that made you one of the legends of the Sun newspaper as opposed to the Times. But at least you're in the Times now, so that's great news. Natalie, would you like to share with us?
Yes, I've brought you all a little gift from the event today. So we had our Individual Merit and Team Achievement Awards, which is an internal event run by our HR department to recognise all the good work that our various departments and colleges and academics and support staff are doing across the university. So I have a little pyramid of sweets. So it is very full, be careful.
Individual.
It's been passed around already.
Individual Merit. And which award did you win yourself, Natalie?
I actually was part of a team best practice award for team cross-team working for the Lincolnshire Show this year that I helped organise.
Can we have a round of applause for Natalie and her team for the Lincolnshire Show? Absolutely awesome. Well done, Natalie.
Thank you. Enjoy the sweets.
But I can tell that Bill, apart from being envious that we're getting sweets in the studio, whereas he's up in Scotland, and it's difficult to put it in the post because by that stage, you don't want to start it, really. What other things can he look forward to? Should he wish to actually bring the Coles family down to Lincoln to check some of the things out that the U events people are putting together?
Well, we have our lovely information zone, which is in the Isaac Newton building, so we've moved across from the Minerva building now. We've outgrown Minerva, where representatives from all across the university are there to talk to and find out lots of information about the university. We've got plenty of societies that will be here as well, representing the societies that you can join at university and the different things that you can get involved in with the SU. So that's all going on, and we've got lots of talks as well throughout the day about university life and coming to university.
When you say you're outgrown Minerva, I think I'm going to actually qualify that by saying that, you know, when an events team is tired of Minerva, they're tired of life. You know, it is the goddess of wisdom. It is the whole system there. You maybe expand a little bit to actually encompass Isaac Newton, who's slightly younger in terms of the whole field. It's all in the same, really. I don't know. They've moved to the other side of the railway tracks, but never mind. But the Pyramid of Sweets is very good. So that's nice. Bill, any questions you'd like to put to either Ben Lewis or Kira Osbrook? Yes, Kira, the one person who said, you know somebody from Disney? I'll be in touch with you then. I don't think it's progressing as yet, but we'll see how things happen. It's a long time ago, Kira. Have you lost your Disney thing as yet?
No.
No, there we are. It'll happen. Right the way through to the wonderful debutant that is Beverly Spencer, or indeed Bethany Gulliver. Who do you wish to go to?
I'd like to go to Beverly, please. Hello. What do we think about the idea of Saren setting up a kind of blind date fixture so that people looking for love can, you can put them up together and then you can interview them afterwards? Would that be a good slot or not?
It could be, yeah, it sounds interesting. How would it work?
You get people who are looking for love to get in touch and then you put them all together.
Intriguing you mentioned that, because we just did a feature actually with Charlie Lester, who's a journalist and graduate of the University of Westminster. She studied law at St. Catharines in Cambridge, and she, as co-founder of Lumen, has actually discovered that if you happen to be a female and you're looking for a single man, then the worst places are actually East Sussex, West Sussex and East Devon. Apparently 43% more single women than men in those particular areas. Lincoln, though, good news. Balanced, totally balanced. It all works perfectly. There we are. So maybe we don't have any need for your idea.
I was going to say there's no need then.
Exactly.
Supply and demand isn't there.
Exactly. Precisely. East Sussex, on the other hand, radio shows fighting for the right for that particular. City of London actually has the fewest single women in the country per single man. Which is extraordinary. And indeed, in the number of single and 50, 60 somethings, etc., that's up 53% since 2002.
How do they work this out?
They number crunch, they drill down. Right. I shall give you the survey. You can actually peruse it yourself, Ben, over the next sort of article, whilst we talk about tigers with Dr. Corinne Taylor-Smith. Beverly, actually, no, Beverly, you won't know the last two questions. Pointless, really. I mean, if you pick them up on this stage, I'd be very impressed. No, let's turn to Kira. Would you like to put those last two questions? I know you can do this.
Last time I did it turned out it'll really work. Bad.
It'll, don't, when you say turned out really bad, we didn't have nuclear war. The studio's still standing.
I didn't say the right word. It's impressive.
It's okay. Just go with it, my girl. Go on.
William, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us?
I've loved it. Thank you so much for asking.
You're very much welcome. And would you like to join us again soon?
Yes, just as soon as the boss asked me. Thank you.
You're very much welcome. I nailed it. I got it right.
Exactly. It's just a win-win situation, quite clearly. Meanwhile, as we head into a whole new world of motivatory factors... And when you're a top-ranked organisation whose aim is to give wild tigers wild futures by protecting wild tigers in their natural habitat and providing educational resources and reducing human-animal conflict via provisions of wildlife, waterholes, education and community-focused projects, you can only be Tigers Forever, that's the number four, ever.org. And we're delighted to welcome to the studio now, making her debut on the Madrid Drive, Dr. Corinne Taylor-Smith. How are you, Corinne?
I'm good, thanks, Alex.
Good. So I'm looking at the website and I'm seeing, obviously, as mentioned, the AIM, the whole system within that. Talk to us about some of the key things here. I mean, just looking at the achievement here, first, you eliminated wild tiger deaths due to retaliatory poisoning and you've managed to succeed in a 94% reduction in wild tiger deaths from poaching since July 2015. So some really good news here, Corinne. See, whatever you're doing, it's working.
Indeed it is. We've got a proven track record of working with the communities who are living with the tigers to find solutions where the people living with the tigers can do so in harmony. And we're doing that through the equipment that we provide for poaching patrollers, the uniforms for our own anti-poaching patrols, and the equipment for Forest Department patrollers that we've provided over the past 8 years. We get almost everything from local suppliers who live in the vicinity of Bandhavgarh Tiger Reserve in Madhya Pradesh, India. And the reason for doing that is that we're fostering a relationship where those businesses are dependent upon tigers for future business from Tigers Forever. And so they're incentivized to keep the tigers safe. And if they hear things in their villages that potential poachers are moving in circles, or if they hear rumours that somebody may have put a baited carcass for tigers or leopards to consume, they're going to report it to us because that's going to have an impact on their business. So, and we've done that to fund around about 20,000 pieces of equipment over the last 8 years from local businesses, including the education packs that we then give out to the children who live in the villages, in the 76 villages around Bandhavgarh, where there are many families where they have a very low rural income of around 550 rupees a week, which is about £7. And to send a child to school for a year, the equipment that they need to send them with pens, papers, the basic books, costs around £3.50 to £4 per child, depending on the age of the child. So with us actually providing this equipment, it takes a bit of pressure off the families, gets kids into education where there's a literacy rate currently of about 57%. And what we've found is that where the educated families, they have fewer children. So it reduces the impact on the forest from trees being cut down for land, for farming, and that obviously has an impact on the tigers as well, because their prey are dependent on the forest for food.
We'll open this out for discussion in a few moments with the team, but Corinne, just share with us, how did you get involved with this yourself?
I've been passionate about tigers since I was about 7 years old, and it was always my ambition to go and see a tiger in the wild. And all the bad news stories that I've seen for most of my adult life pushed me to doing something about it in 2007. And we visited Bandhavgarh as one of three tiger areas in India. And what was most striking about Bandhavgarh is that there were no other major international charities working in the area, despite the fact that it had the highest density of tigers per square kilometre, which seemed a bit bizarre to ourselves. And we were enchanted by one particular sub-adult, 28-month-old tiger cub on the side of the road, just sitting there, sunbathing and digesting his breakfast. And he sat and stared at our jeep for about an hour. And we must have taken about 200 photographs of him. And on the way back home to England, I decided we've got to do something so that tiger can have a wild future. So we looked at various options of raising money for other charities so that they would do something in Bandhavgarh. And to cut a long story short, the the take-up to do the work which we wanted to do wasn't good. So we decided in 2010 we'll set up our own charity and we'll do something ourselves to help save this cub. The cub grew up to be the alpha male, so...
It's got a lot to be thankful to you for. We're looking at the video on Tigers Forever at present. It's opening up for discussion. Beverly, any thoughts on what you're seeing at present or any questions for Corinne?
Well, I think that's a beautiful story, that he actually grew up to be the alpha male, so he's really helping the population.
It's almost like a Disney story in many ways, right? It's a whole range of things in it. Natalie, thoughts or questions from yourself?
How often do you go back to visit the Tigers now that you've had this charity set up?
We try and make sure that we go out at least once a year, but we don't go out under the steam of Tigers Forever. David, my husband and myself, we pay for our own trips to India, or we use our air miles to get there, and we have a look at the charity's projects, see how everything's doing whilst we're out there, because we want to keep the cost that the charity has down to an absolute minimum. So we never take any expenses from the charity, so that 100% of donations which we receive will go into charitable benefits. So once a year, if we win the lotto, we'll perhaps go a little more often. But we usually spend about 2.5-3 weeks out there and try and catch up with some of the tigers we're hoping to save whilst we're there.
Bethany.
Hello. Yeah, I think that's a really good movement here, but I was just wondering, so obviously you're trying to make sure that like humans and animals can sort of live in harmony, and I love that idea, but how do you sort of go about that, and is it a case of just raising awareness? Because I didn't think that was possible, to be honest. I think it's amazing.
Well, it's not easy, and it's obviously taken us about 8 years to get to where we are now, but what we do is we've got two people who are based out there as full-time volunteers who are Indians. They live within the community. They run our projects on the ground there. For one aspect of our education project, we have a collaboration with a locally based NGO in India, Global Tiger Conservation Society, and they do a series of pop-up schools so we can work within the community that way, and they do things in the name of Tigers Forever, like distributing the education packs and materials that we provide. And they talk to them about the work that we're doing. But as I mentioned at the beginning, one of the main things that we have done is we've spoken with people in the villages about the things that they want from the forest and the things that bother them about tigers. And one of the biggest things with human-animal conflict is everyone assumes that it's the tiger that causes the human-animal conflict, when in reality, the animals that are the prey of the tigers cause far more human-animal conflict than the tigers themselves. And one of the difficulties is that people historically have grazed their cattle and their other livestock wherever they liked in the forest. And then they've had these demarcation areas where they've made them protected areas, and suddenly the villagers are told, no, you can't graze your cattle here anymore. And you can't, you know, take fodder from the forest for your livestock. But essentially, that kind of works, but there are encroachments to every rule, as you know. And what we do is when our poaching patrollers encounter people in the forest cutting down grasses for the animals and livestock, or grazing the cattle where they shouldn't be, cutting down branches of trees, our patrollers talk to them about if they're grazing the cattle and taking the fodder that's meant for the wild prey, the wild animals will come into their crops and eat their crops. And if the wild animals go and eat the crops, the tigers will follow, and the leopards and the other predators. And when they do follow, the wild prey runs away and the cattle and the goats stay standing still, and the tigers have a killing frenzy, or the leopards have a killing frenzy, because suddenly they're presented with a whole abundance of food that doesn't run. And then
it's like going to the supermarket, you know, and not having to pay anything. It's amazing.
Absolutely. And it's a case of these animals that are providing an income that supplements the from the sale of crops. When the crops are gone, they use the milk from these animals to sell to have an income to live. And of course, if they lose a cow, then they've lost the income from that cow. And traditionally, the forest department and government used to take a long time to pay the compensation, and there was lots of wranglings about where was the tiger killing made. Was it done inside the protected area or inside the village? And the difficulty with predators is when they've got a kill, they'll stash it somewhere. So quite often with these villages that are on the edge of the tiger reserve, and there are no firm boundaries because that's bad for the genetic population, it's just like there are demarcation stones where the villagers know this is the point where you can't cross, but the tigers don't pay any attention to that. And they would drag the carcass back into the protected part of the forest, and then the compensation wouldn't be paid. So three and a half years ago, we negotiated with the local forest department and government that there would be a difference in the way that compensation was going to be paid, because the gripe for most of the villagers was that they didn't get paid compensation quickly, or they didn't get it at all. And many of the NGOs and charities, international charities, would end up paying that compensation to try and protect the tiger from the retaliatory poisoning.
I think, Corinne, the wonderful stuff that you're actually saying there, it just proves that there's a way that the narrative is developing and you're actually making a difference, which is the important thing. Ben, have you any thoughts that you'd like to add to what you've been listening to for Tigers Forever, obviously conservation of an icon?
Yes, certainly. So I've just made a couple of notes. Just kind of from my own experience, really. But certainly about tigers, do you find a younger audience now becoming a bit more aware of tigers from documentaries like, you know, things like David Attenborough's done, or with similar documentaries of National Geographic? If there's a raising awareness, do you feel like people are more interested now as they've gone on through time? Even books like Tiger Who Came to Tea, for example, you know, something as a classic book from a childhood era. Do you find people from a younger age are becoming more interested?
I think it's a mix. I mean, we've done some talks in schools, and in the schools you get a very broad mix of responses from the kids. Some are sort of very focused on climate issues, conservation, ecology, the impact on potentially extinct species, or those in danger of near extinction. And then you get the others who are so techno-focused, it's like, no, or they're focused on the horror side, it's like, have you got any pictures of poached tigers?
People been really mauled to death by tigers and
yeah,
so on. Yeah.
Or have you ever been bitten by one? Or, yeah. You know, they're interested in the gruesome side. So I think it's a mix, and I think that it's difficult with an organisation our size. I mean, we know that we've got around about 10,000 followers globally. So it's difficult to gauge from such a small population whether that sort of is reflective of a global population. But certainly we come across a whole mix of people from different backgrounds. And one of the age groups that it is the most difficult to attract into liking tigers and following us rather than one of the larger charities is the under 25s.
Which is one of the reasons why hopefully we fit perfectly from that perspective, and this is available obviously as a podcast as well. A reminder, it's Tigers 4, as in the number 4, ever. That's tigersforever.org to go to. That'll give you a link to the fundraising page for Match Donations, the online shop, which is also there, Tigers Forever as well. We'll continue hopefully rescuing a whole range of aspects, or hopefully educating the fact that it's a one planet world that we live in, and whether you're actually a fan of the Bengal tiger, the Indo-Chinese tiger, the Malayan tiger, the South China tiger, or the Sumatran tiger. Well, they deserve some love and affection too, and indeed nice to see that they also have as much insight in terms of boundary rights as perhaps some of our Brexit negotiations, but I won't mention that any further. Corinne, it's been lovely sharing some thoughts with your good self today. Have you had an interesting debut on the programme? Has it been okay for you?
I think it's been very nice. I mean, I hope that you'll give me the chance to just mention that over the next 4 or 5 weeks, we're going to be running a campaign to say give a tiger a wild Christmas, starting on Giving Tuesday. And we have a donation link, which hopefully you will share for our Global Giving donation page. And we're hoping with that one that we can raise sufficient funds to get our poaching patrols into the field in 2019, because at the minute, fundraising is not going too well in that area.
Well, it's a win-win situation as far as we're concerned, and we'll make sure that that's mentioned. Maybe we should actually have Rudolph the Red-Nosed Tiger as a possibility for a line. It's worth considering. Corinne, I take it you'll be able to return in the not-too-distant future?
I'd be delighted to.
Mudge, take us out with Tiger Feet. We say in the second part of the programme, we've got Arthur Weingarten from San Diego, Arch Hades from Instagram, and Tessa Snart joining us, all after the news from the Sky... From the Siren News team. Much better than the Sky, obviously. And headed up in all sorts of marvellous ways when we simply say those words. It's time for the Siren News, because it is 5:45. Awesome.
Change it now, but I'm still looking.
So the news from San Diego? Actually, no news from San Diego, because we're receiving the Weingarten answer phone. Never mind, it's probably because Annette's over in Britain and Arthur's in San Diego, and Annette will be joining us at 9 o'clock next Thursday, and clearly the confusion has actually reigned, but never mind, that's part and parcel of the rich tapestry that we've got here on the Midweek Drive. Beverly, how are you finding the programme? Is it everything that Rory promised you it might be?
Yeah, he just said, yeah, you'll get a microphone and be asked to speak, and that was all he promised me. Really? So yes, it is.
That's the sole thing that he actually gave you about the body of you. Amazing. Talk about events and various other bits and pieces. What other things are coming up that you'd like to promote? Or is it a case of, don't we say, after the December open day, we just go into hibernation for several months?
Oh, no, definitely not. We've got lots coming up. So we have the 1st of December open day. We've then got another open day on the 12th of December, which is a Wednesday. And then we go into our offer holder day season. And, of course, we've got our Great Lives talks as well going on over the next few months.
And can you just share some of the Great Lives that we'll be talking in the next few months? Or is it a case of, check out the website, for goodness sakes? I can't be doing that. You don't pay me enough for that. Check out the website.
Definitely keep an eye on the website, because we are posting new talks each week. And we will be releasing next season as soon as possible as well. So keep a look on the website.
So now, will you be actually attending the fantastic Christmas show that takes place at the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre, which we were covering this afternoon actually with Inspired on Air, that of course is Rapunzel.
I love Rapunzel.
Well, then you'll be going, won't you?
I feel like I should be going.
I think you should. You should get that all sort of folk down there, because you know, you only get one chance to see Rapunzel, and this could be it, really. So well worth sort of seeing. Or, of course, you might be challenged by the notion that Bethany is one of the newer reviewers for the new Lincoln Theatre Royal. Yes, you will certainly be accompanied by Kira as well, who has promised us faithfully she'll go to the theatre too. Yes. Because you're checking out the pantomime there, aren't you?
Yeah, I am indeed.
Which will
I'm
be?
Really excited.
Cinderella. Is it Cinderella?
No, Snow White and Seven Dwarfs.
Snow White and Seven Dwarfs.
Yeah,
no,
with
Amelia
Lily.
With Amelia, yeah. Exactly. Obviously, finger was on the pulse from that particular line, which is great. When's the last time you went to a pantomime, Beverly?
Well, I used to do the pantomime at the Lincoln Theatre Royal.
Oh, amazing.
Well, I did, yeah.
Principal Bog?
No.
No,
I was actually one of the babes.
Of course, yeah. Inevitably. In the wood?
Yes.
That's the kind of routine. It's wonderful. So, Kira, are you looking forward to doing some stuff with the new Lincoln Theatre Royal?
Yes, I am. I get to see some, quite good shows and things. So.
Quite good shows.
Quite good shows.
That's exactly. Don't want to oversell the whole bit. Up next, if we can't get Arthur, we'll be having Joe Wicks and more.
Europe.
Well, it would seem that the gap between healthy eating expectations and reality is bigger than ever. A recent survey suggests that 85% suggests that we could all be eating more healthily, and 45% of parents are worrying about their children's eating habits. So let's talk about this particular Gusto's Healthy Eating Index report with two fabulous folk. First of all, nutritionist extraordinaire Charlotte Sterling-Reed. How are you, Charlotte?
Hello, I'm really good, thank you. Thanks for having us on.
Very good. And cookbook author extraordinaire Joe Wick. How are you, Joe?
Hello, they've never been called an extraordinaire before.
Well, you know, with the body coach being there in full force, that's clearly the way forward. Now, Charlotte, if we can come to you first, were you surprised by this result? I mean, some of the lines there, the one that really got me was that 1 in 10 of those surveyed had no idea what a portion of vegetables looks like.
Yeah, I think some of the stats were really shocking. I think, you know, the fact that 62% of people eat fruit and veg less than 5 times a week, that the findings from Recipe Box Gusto survey found, I think that is quite shocking. But the thing that I really liked was the stat that suggested that 85% of people feel that they could eat more healthily. I think that suggests that people are wanting to make changes to their diet, but they're not necessarily sure about how, or they feel they don't have the time or the motivation or the confidence to do so. And ultimately, that's what it's about. It's about giving people confidence to improve what they're eating and help them to make it easier to cook from fresh and from scratch at home.
You're absolutely right, of course, but then the road to Hades is paved with good intentions, and it's all well saying, oh yes, you know, it's rather like the popularity of cooking programs. We all think, oh, we should actually do that, but somehow in the stresses and strains of modern life, you get to the situation of, oh well, I'll just have the sandwich on the go, I'll just have the coffee on the go. And I think I'm probably as guilty as everybody else from this point of view, that somehow there's this illusion that somehow getting vegetables together, it takes us so much time, we just can't be bothered. This presumably, Joe, is where you can actually help with 15 minute meals and workouts to keep us lean and healthy.
Yeah, well, the study also found that more than 1 in 5 people eat a microwave or ready meal 3 times a week. So this is something I'm trying to help overcome. I think convenience food, lack of time, the fact that people have got busy, you know, lives and kids and all sorts of stuff going on means that they are grabbing these things on the go and they're relying on that as a help, as a food source. But we all know, you know, these processed meals aren't containing very healthy fats and the salt and all the other things they add. So I'm trying to get people to remove the barrier of time from their head and convince them that, do you know what, you have got 15 minutes to do a workout and you have got 15 minutes to cook a healthy meal, and, you know, having like these recipe boxes delivered to your door makes it easier. It's even one step closer to making that a bit more simple.
Salt, sugar, obesity crises, excess carbohydrate, all kind of ways which adds to the stress. I mean, Charlotte, does it sometimes seem as though we're battling a never-ending saga of negative headlines about the nation's health, particularly when it comes to nutrition?
Yeah, I think so, certainly. I mean, one of the things I try and do in my work is be positive, talk about the positive aspects of food, because there's actually so much we can do to improve our health, and it doesn't have to be tricky. It doesn't have to be hard or time-consuming. It can be really simple. You know, it doesn't have to cost you a lot of money or take a lot of time to add a few more fruits and veg into your diet or to get more experimental with the dishes that you're cooking at home. So, you know, I think that people are always talking about the negative, what we shouldn't do in our diet, what we should cut out, and actually I'd like to people to turn that on its head and start thinking about what they can add in, how they can flavour foods with different herbs and spices, and you know, get back to enjoying food rather than restricting and thinking negatively about it.
So, Joe, in terms of getting that wonderful, virtuous circle put together between clearly the desire that we all have to actually want to improve our diet and so on, a 7-10 Brit surveyed admitted to repeating the same meal at least once a week, they want to actually work through that. How can your cookbook work to actually develop that and provide us with some recipe inspiration?
Yeah, there's so, you know, I'm guilty of that as well. You know, back in the day when I used to eat the same thing over and over again, and it's quite boring, and you rely on the, you know, your shop basket's got the same things every single week. But, you know, there's my books, there's my Instagram, there's loads of awesome blogs and recipes online where people can, you know, give you some inspiration. But also, you know, things like Gusto, it's like a solution for people that are busy. You want to try new things, get it delivered to your door, all the ingredients, bang on, you don't throw anything away. You know, it makes life easier. And I think it's just about trying new things, getting confident. And once you do, you're going to stay away from them ready meals, because that food doesn't make you feel good. It doesn't give you energy. It makes you knackered, you know. So it is about starting. I always say, when you lose your excuses, you'll find your success. And like, we all have the same amount of hours in a day. We can all fit in a workout. We can all fit in, you know, a healthy recipe. And you've just got to get going, start, and you're going to really feel the benefits almost straight away.
Clearly, there are already sufficient amounts of sugar and salt already present in food without necessarily adding any more into it. But again, looking at the survey itself, 4 in 10 people actually failed to identify 6 grams of salt as the correct recommended daily allowance. Likewise, 1 in 10 actually believed it to be 60 grams, which, you know, it is. Again, Charlotte, turning to your good self, are we just confused by the science? Is it just a case of we want to end up like the human beings in Wall-E and actually sort of just exist out there, completely out of our bodies in all sorts of ways?
I think that, you know, public health messages are really important. We do need those public health messages. We need public health guidelines and recommendations, but they don't always translate into what people should be doing at home. And I think that's the importance about, you know, nutritionists and dietitians like myself are all about converting those messages, which might be a little bit more technical, into public health messages that people can digest and understand and actually changes people can make at home. So I'm not surprised that people don't know that 6 grams is a recommended amount of salt. And I'm not surprised that people don't know what that might look like. But actually what it's about is trying to, you know, talk about the other aspects. So yes, salt's fine in the diet, but actually we get enough of it. So let's think about how we could flavour our food and make food taste delicious without using salt, because there's plenty of ways that we can do that too. So I think the public health messages are really important, but I also think that there's a way of us trying to get these messages, simple hacks, simple changes that people can make to their diet that can improve their health, and it doesn't have to be hard.
And for parents who are actually faced with children say, I don't like my greens, I'm not going to eat my vegetables and so on, what are the suggestions with respect to that?
Keep going. Getting children to like food is all about familiarity. It's about what they're used to. It's about what the family eats. So I'd say relax, have fun with food, get everybody around the table eating together as much as possible, and just don't give up, because actually children can take 5, 6, 7, even 10 to 15 times before they accept foods. But the more familiar you make them with food, the more likely they are to accept and enjoy as they get older.
Gusto.co.uk, best website to go to find out further details, Gusto.co.uk.
That's it, yeah, perfect.
Marvellous.
Yeah, give it a go.
Well, Joe Wicks, I should say, it's been fantastic connecting with you.
We're
yourself. I was conflating the two of you from that moment there. I know we can actually go through all sorts of things on these interviews, but who knows what happened. I will say that Joe Wicks, cookbook author extraordinaire, and indeed a wonderful British fitness coach. Many thanks indeed. And Charlotte Sterling Reed, ace nutritionist. Many thanks indeed, and happy eating to you both.
Thank you.
Of course, had I realised, Bethany, that you're a fan of Joe Wicks because he allows you to eat white bread.
Yeah, it's amazing. Oof. It's not many diets that let you do that.
I would have raised that with him when I actually spoke to him a day or so ago. But that was Joe Wicks and Charlotte Sterling Reed doing their stuff because we couldn't quite get through to San Diego. Never mind. Poetry, Beverly, are you into poetry? Is it a sort of thing that you appeal, or you sort of think, oh, I don't know, with the dance, with the creative writing, with the journalism and so on, it's just too much, really.
No, I absolutely love poetry.
Well, I will pass over my little tablet here, which has got details of Arch Hades' Instagram work there, so you might like to peruse some of the actual thoughts that I actually then share with the list of some of the key things, because Arch is up in a few moments' time, as we say, Instagram poet extraordinaire, who will be joining us and sharing the whole show. And Ben, have you suffered the heartache? Have you been prone to actually sort of write a poetic word verse every so often as a case of no?
I haven't, I'm afraid. It's not really my expertise. It's not even my area, to be honest. I quite happily read them. I'm very interested in reading poetry, but
poetry
I don't have
and
the
postcards,
myself.
Of course, postcards and poetry.
I do postcards.
Yeah. Right. Kira, do you do postcards?
I did when I was
back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day, when I was like 7.
And Bethany, are you a postcard person, a poetry person?
Poetry, actually. Write a bit of poetry.
Well, then you can share some of the lines with respect to Arch in a few moments after The Partridge Family.
It's one of those nights when you turn out the lights and you sit in the dark and say to yourself, I miss her. It's one of those moods when your body broods and you conjure up her picture and you kiss her. It's one of those things for the pain it brings. You say to yourself, hey, couldn't I live without it? Well, I think so. On the other hand, I doubt it. rushing through my mind like waves upon the shore.
Like waves upon the shore.
And I nod my head, whoa, yes, love, I'd welcome you again if you knocked upon my door.
If you knocked upon my door.
If you did not seek you out, love, I'd track you down for sure, like a thousand times before.
Like a thousand times before.
Whoa, yes, love, I'd welcome you again, like you knew I've done before. Yes, love, you know I did before. Yes, love, you know I did before. So it goes, it's a cold in the nose, it's a pain in the neck, it'll make you a wreck if it gets ya. It's so insane, cause through all the rain, when you ask yourself, could you do it again, fetch ya. I hear a voice say, you got no chance, and it makes me mad, and I shout, oh yeah, who says so? Well, of course not, on the other hand, yes, so. Suddenly she's crashing through my mind, like waves upon the shore.
Like waves upon the shore.
And I nod my head, oh yes, love, I'd welcome you again if you knocked upon my door.
If you knocked upon my door.
If you did not seek you out, love, I'd track you down for sure, like a thousand times before. Welcome you again, like you know I did before. Yes, love, you know I did before. Yes, love, you know I did before.
You gave me mornings filled with birdsong and starry evenings, just us two. Constant love throughout the seasons. My heart would harden without you. Not my words, but the words of Archades, who's back with us again to celebrate the joys of poetry and art and all sorts of things. Arch, welcome to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
Hi, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, as I said, we were so impressed with the piece you actually did on a sister station that we thought it was high time you actually joined us on the Midweek Drive to actually connect with the full Midweek Drive team and so on. I was so impressed with respect to poetry and postcards, I only went and actually purchased e-copies of the book, which I can now actually pass back to Beverly, having sorted out what button she actually pressed. All we have to do is just slide it along and all the messages are actually there, Beverly. I know it's technology, it's using a tablet as opposed to a piece of paper and such like stuff, and the postcards are virtual, but there we are. Arch, in the studio, I'll just introduce you to the fine foursome who are actually here. We have Beverly Spencer.
Hello.
Hello.
And we also have Kira Allsbrook.
Hello.
And hello. We also have Bethany Gulliver.
Hello.
And we have Ben Lewis.
Good evening.
There we are, you see, it's all sorted through there. You've got a mixture of English students, creative writing students, journalism students, public relations students, all manner of wonderful things from that point of view. And we've been perusing the whole system, but just set the scene once again. Why did you come up with this whole notion of putting your poetry on Instagram?
Well, to me, I guess the only thing that makes life worth living is the possibility of experiencing now and again a perfect moment. And perhaps even more than that, it's having the ability to recall those moments in their totality and then to contemplate them like jewels. And that, to me, that's what poetry is.
That works for me. Beverly, you have a little chance to have a perusal through various other bits and pieces.
Yes,
your thoughts?
Absolutely, and very nicely said. Congratulations on getting that book deal from this. I'm just having a look through some of your poetry now, and it is beautiful. It's from the heart, completely.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I always thought that what comes from the heart touches the heart, so I'm so happy that it has resonance.
It's authentic, yes.
It's interesting too, that whole notion of authentic, the realistic aspects that's there. Now, I was surprised, I must admit, Arch, when I, because it literally, it says exactly what it says. It's poetry and it's postcards, because part one is poetry, and then part two, we've got New Zealand, we've got Sydney, we've got Easter Island, and we've got the back of the, which basically postcards from that point of view onwards. So why that juxtaposition of poetry and postcards?
Well, to me, postcards have always been quite important, and it's a habit that sort of picked up when I spent my childhood in boarding school, when electronics and mobile phones and the internet as a whole was very restricted. So my only outlet became sort of writing to my loved ones, and so letters and postcards became very important to me, and I sort of carried on that habit throughout. And I found that when you have a very small physical piece of paper to write on, suddenly you have to be very, you know, concise and eloquent. And really put your message across. So at the time of writing, it helps you to be very reflective of, you know, your internal state and also your external state, and it helps you to be very present and reflective. And then also afterwards, when you actually read those words back to you, you know, in months or years, etc., it's just a very beautiful way to capture a moment and then sort of, you know, muse on it and become quite nostalgic. So I encourage everyone to sort of pick up their pens and start writing postcards. And you're right to point out that in High Tide, part two is just postcards. And those are actual, so those are all the photographs that I took myself on my travels, and I made them into postcards. And then I actually wrote them out myself. Those are real, only the addresses have been redacted in white so you can't see them. But they're scans of actual postcards that I send to people just to try and make it as authentic as possible.
It's great art, quite clearly. Ben, looking at the Instagram post there, 69,800 followers. Genius. Arch, success on that basis. But Ben, what are your thoughts from a PR perspective?
I'm actively encouraged, like you say, about postcards. I do it myself. In fact, I do it through a website. There's a website called Postcrossing. And I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but essentially you choose to send a postcard to someone first. You sign up, you make your own profile. They then randomly select someone around the world, give you their biography, the address details, and a little code you put. And then when they receive it, they input the code in there so it goes back to you. They can write a thank you message. And then once you've sent one and it's been logged, you receive one from somewhere around the world out of the blue, which is something I do quite often, and I absolutely love it.
That sounds so wonderful.
Yeah, I certainly recommend having a look at it if you get an opportunity. But going back to your work and what you do, do you often find people resonate with what you do, but then also give you direct feedback? Perhaps if you see them or even on your post, do you often find that helps you as well?
Oh, absolutely. Not just in the sort of the public comment sections, but I get an astounding number of emails and also DMs about my poetry. Sometimes people write poetry to me and I get to sort of look through it and, you know, like maybe give advice. Somebody asks for it, which is wonderful, and I really enjoy that. But what's been such a very positive experience for me and a very positive impact of social media is the fact that I do get to share this with people from around the world. And when they tell me that, when they experience emotions that I have too, and it makes them feel less alone, them telling me that, in turn, it makes me feel less alone. So I think that as soon as we find other people who go through the same things as us, we sort of become a community, and we become rooted in that, and we can support each other even if we've never met. And that's what I find so beautiful about being able to use such a tool as Instagram to achieve that.
Bethany, as an English undergraduate, soon to be graduate, your thoughts on Archer's work and Instagram stuff and so on?
It's beautiful. I've been reading some of it on Instagram, and it seems to have been quite cathartic for you, to be honest. I get that impression from it. But I'd be interested in it. Who do you think your poetry actually appeals to, or is it sort of a case of anyone could read it?
Well, the small snippets that I share on Instagram, I believe they're more centred on the theme of love and more about heartbreak. But I also just want to try and sort of create a narrative, as I hope that you find in the book. It's more of a journey from sort of heartbreak to acceptance, and then sort of being open-hearted enough to fall in love again. So anyone sort of within that spectrum, I believe we've all, you know, experienced love and loss. I think those are such universal emotions. And if anybody is experiencing heartbreak at the moment, the only thing I can really say is that time will just heal it all and you'll be able to move through it.
Beverly, you've had a chance to peruse through some of the poetry now and seen various other bits and pieces. Any thoughts you'd like to add?
Yes, this is great. I'm glad I found you, because part of the course that I'm doing at the moment, we have to write poetry, and I've discovered actually that I can sit down and just, it all comes flooding out, and like yourself, it's kept in rhyme and rhythm. So this is great. You are inspiring me even further.
Oh, see, that's what a midweek drive is all about, Beverly. Yes, it opens up the whole thing. Kira, any thoughts from yourself?
Well, I think poetry is quite therapeutic. And I love the way, I've been looking through some of your poems as well, and particularly Venice and Grand Haven. And I do actually like the way, how opposite they are, how you can go from opening your heart to somebody and then basically, you know,
wanted to kill them.
No. And then seeing how, like, basically the love that you share is basically no more, but how you do it in such, like, an elegant way is quite interesting to me. Like, I think it's quite good how the words just, like, literally dance across the page. It's quite interesting.
You could use that as a quote, Arch. The words literally dance across the page.
That's wonderful. That's so kind. Thank you so much to you and Beverly as well. I'm so happy to receive such positive feedback from you guys. Thank you so much for reading and for supporting. I really appreciate that.
That's what we're about, you see. Kira, Beverly, Bethany, and indeed, of course, Ben. We'll work you through that. Now, when you made your debut on this production, we did invite you to sort of give a little bit of performance poetry. Would you like to share another piece of poetry for us this evening, please, Arch? Have you got something to hand?
Oh, of course. I certainly do. And if you don't mind, I'd actually quite like to read you a new poem that will be in my volume 2. So this one isn't in High Tide. And this is something that I wrote very, very recently, as just to give a little bit of context. This was, I was spending a very autumnal Saturday afternoon with a friend, and we were just walking through the park. We were walking my dog, Byron. And every time there was a gust of wind, these beautiful orange and yellow leaves would just cascade down. And it just made me reflect on how beautiful autumn is, even though it is a certain death in itself. But it just made me reflect on that, even all this like loss and death, it's still part of life itself. And even just that is so beautiful. So this following poem is called Autumn, and it goes like this. Wet bark aglow with gilded leaves, chorus of rustles as they dance, a death so beautiful I grieve, a heaving waltz, terminal trance, shedding memories, proud celebration, not breaking, simply breaking free, homecoming, pre-reincarnation, we watch the world turn through these trees, suffering, pain, all part of bliss, enchanting beauty of the living, my heart at liberty chose this, not bitter loss, but sweet forgiving. Accept all things I cannot change. You keep my faith, discard my scars. All off life's end, no longer strange. My nights are low on nightmares now.
And applause, please. Yes. Wonderful. Arch, it's been phenomenal, as we knew it would be. Welcome you back to the production. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link yourself?
Yes, thank you very much for having me.
So the next critical question is, what, Bethany? What's the next question?
Would you like to return and speak to us again at some point?
Oh. I would absolutely be delighted to. Thank you very much.
I think we can genuinely say, Arch Hades, she will return. Hurrah!
From
promise me that you'll give faith a fighting chance. And when you get the choice to sit it out or dance, I hope you dance. I hope you dance. I hope you never fear those mountains in the distance. Never settle for the path of least resistance. Living might mean taking chances, but they're worth taking. Loving might be a mistake, but it's worth making. Don't let some helping heart leave you bitter. When you come close to selling out, reconsider. Give the heavens above more than just a passing glance. And when you get the choice to sit it out or dance, I hope you do. Promise me that you'll give faith a fighting chance. And when you get the choice to sit it out or dance.
Search for romance. Where's the best place to go? What are we supposed to be doing with the whole process, etc.? Why is it that the City of London has the fewest single women in the country per single man? And what other disparities actually occur with respect to the whole dating game? Well, the best person to surely speak to about this is a journalist extraordinaire, dating industry expert, and indeed co-founder of Lumen, the awesome Charlie Lester. How are you, Charlie? Marvellous. So this particular survey that's come through from dating app Lumen, it's looked at a whole range of relationship information from all the local authorities in England and Wales. Is it true? Is London basically the worst place to go if you're looking for love?
It's definitely one of the worst places if you're a woman. If you're a man, it's brilliant because there's a lot more single women than there are single men. So it's a tricky one because in reality, if you look nationwide, there are a lot more single women than men across all age groups. I think the average is 86 men for every 100 single women, which is a little bit depressing as a single woman myself. But I think what's quite interesting about this data is that you can kind of game it a little bit and work out, okay, where are there more single men if you're a single woman, or vice versa? How have I got a chance of meeting more people? And if you are in one of these areas that is a little bit worse off, perhaps look at things like dating apps to cast your net wider.
This certainly seems as though it's a strategy gone to real, all those Machiavellian techniques and the whole thing. Is it worth considering that this is actually very much from a heteronormative perspective, that actually if there are an excess of men in a particular area, that might be great if you happen to sort of be so inclined?
Yeah, obviously, because of the nature of the data, the way it's been pulled, it's from the Office of National Statistics and also looks at household panel studies. They don't ask people their sexuality. However, what it does tell you is the areas where there are lots of single men or single women. So obviously, if you are interested in men or women, go to the area where there are more of those people, and you're more than likely to find people who are of the same persuasion as you.
I can see here, Charlie, that we're clearly sort of opening up a whole range of statistical data and probabilities and various other factors. So drilling down, we mentioned, let's say, that it's actually hardest to find love in the City of London, where there are 25% more single men than women. But as I say, if you probably look, maybe, as you said, is the bottle half full? Is it half empty? Could be an interesting line on that.
It really does look, it does depend on how you're looking at it, doesn't it? I mean, so the toughest place, I would say the toughest place for men, for heterosexual men, is the City of London. And there's also Newham, which is a borough of London, and also Cambridge. They were the three worst places for men. And for women, it tends to be more.
It's good to see
we've
actually got some canine support there for you, Charlie. You know, to say, yes, she's absolutely right. And if you're a dog, it's even worse.
He's a male dog, so he's obviously, you know, barking for the other side.
Precisely.
I think for women, it's really interesting actually, because it still goes back to job stereotypes. You'd think in 2018 that we would be beyond the idea of women working in certain industries and men in others and different parts of the country. But actually, when you look at the data, there are quite clear trends in things like there are more single women in sort of suburban areas, so areas where perhaps there are more families, perhaps those of single mothers is one of the suggestions from the statistics. Also, a lot of the kind of rural farming areas, there are a lot more men than women. The north, there are a lot more men in the north. So if you're a woman, it's actually easier to find a date, allegedly, in the north than in the south.
So intrigued in terms of if you're a woman and you're looking for, again, a date. Arran in West Sussex, Rother in East Sussex and East Devon are actually tied, joint first place, for the hardest place to actually find a single man. 43% more single women than men. So, again, I presume the reverse of the situation is if you're a man looking for a woman from that point of view, maybe West Sussex or indeed Sussex in general could be the place to be.
But it's interesting. I mean, if you look at Lincolnshire, I think Lincolnshire is actually one of the most equal areas of the country when it comes to single men and single women.
We're always well balanced, Charlie. That's the important thing. You know, it's it may well be that Cambridge has various other bits and pieces, but Lincoln, well balanced folk.
But yeah, I mean, that's another thing. I think the thing is that I don't think anyone should despair. If you kind of look at the stats and think, oh my gosh, this is even harder for me to meet someone, then I think the key is actually just broadening. Because obviously the statistics, good word, are taken from boroughs. So if you date outside your borough or you date in more than one borough at a time, you're actually obviously improving your chances, which is where I just think it shows that perhaps we need to move away from this idea of kind of romantic comedy chance encounters and meet cutes.
Are you saying, Charlie, that life isn't like a Hollywood movie? you stand me, my girl. This is outrageous.
Much as I would love to meet my future husband as our eyes glance over the cornflakes in my local supermarket, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to meet him that way.
Wow.
So I think it's quite nice to explore your other options. I mean, and this is obviously where Lumen comes in. It's a dating app for over 50s. And when we looked at the data for over 50s, it's actually even kind of more sad if you are a woman in over 50 in terms of the numbers. It's, I think, the national average is 77 single men over 50 for every 100 women. So it is quite tough, actually, if you are just looking locally. So I think this idea of widening your chances and trying to, you know, dating is a numbers game these days. And I think whilst obviously there are some people who might have this kind of Hollywood-like encounter where they send one message on a dating app or a dating site and meet their future partner, it's not always the case of that. And I think people need to sort of keep an open mind, remember that it is a numbers game, but that these forms of technology allow you to meet so many more people.
There are those of us who would actually maintain when the very thought of actually using online technology to connect with somebody was actually the last resort in any way, shape or form. You just wouldn't go there at all. But interestingly enough, again, looking at the slightly more chronologically gifted folks, single women aged between 50 and 69, if you're living in Harrow, Elmbridge in Surrey or Merton, tough times. And likewise for single men, Isles of Scilly, followed by the City of London and Copeland being the more challenging areas. Isn't it enough to almost make you decide to actually change one's ideology and go back to the days of arranged marriages and so on?
I don't think so, because I think, like we said, you know, it's a glass is half empty or half full. Yes, this silly island might be not great if you're male and straight, but actually if you're female, they're a brilliant place to go. So I think perhaps it's just a question of balance, and maybe someone looking at these stats might think, you know what, maybe I should go somewhere else where I can create that equality that you guys in Lincoln have obviously already got.
This is clearly what actually sort of being bred in Reading, studying at Cambridge, and then doing postgraduate work at the University of Westminster, this is what it's all about. This has brought the legend that is Charlie Lester to the fore. You know, this is great. And co-founder of Lumen as well. Charlie, how can people find out more about Lumen? What's the website you'd suggest that people should go to?
So you can download Lumen from the App Store, so regardless of whether you've got an Android or an iPhone. But if you want more details, our website is www.lumenapp.com.
Charlie, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with your good self across the airwaves in so many of delightful ways. But the two questions, which I know our ace producer, Rachel, will be devastated if we didn't actually use, so we have to use them. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you and your two sleeping dogs?
I loved it, and Dudley was so excited he woke up. He didn't even sleep through.
Now, you obviously referred to one as Dudley. Is the other one called Pete?
Hugo.
Oh, Hugo and Dudley. Oh, intriguing. never mind. I thought it might have been as in Dudley Cook and Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. The next critical question. Will you be able to return? Will you kindly return in 2018, and 2019, in fact, and tell us what great things you're doing with Lumen? Will you come back to us, Charlie?
I would love to.
Honestly, it's enough to make you say...
Sound and Country Vision on Siren Radio with Tessa Snart and friends, opening up a whole continent of music and magic.
Isn't it, Tessa?
It is. Hello.
Oh, no, outrageous. In case people are wondering, Tessa's sounding an awful lot unlike Phil Leonis, or Phil Leonis is sounding an awful lot like Tessa Snart this week. Phil is actually deep in rehearsal. He's deep in rehearsal for his birthday. Now, I know, it's American. That's the way things are. They have to rehearse when they actually turn into a certain
thing. What's he rehearsing?
He's rehearsing his 40s, 50s turning thing that he's doing. But he has assured us he's going to be with us at midnight in Los Angeles, which, of course, is 8 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Right. So that's the late one for him, then.
It would be. Long day of rehearsals in Los Angeles. Gabriella Peralta, Stephanie Romashevsky, Richard Fitzwilliams, Helen Skelton, Santa Claus might appear on the show tomorrow. Although, actually, technically, Santa Claus has already appeared. No, it's Santa Claus.
No, but Santa Claus is the American way, isn't it?
Bethany is the American way. Well,
we could go with St. Nick. There you go.
We could indeed. Ian Lennox, Rachel Teat, Dr. Anna Machin, and Christine Webber will be joining Ellie Sample, Ben Lewis, Emma Street, Abigail LeMay, and Rory McGowan on the breakfast lineup. Because I gather you're not with us this morning tomorrow.
I'm not,
no.
I'm afraid. And
Kira has yet to actually do a breakfast show in the morning, so I mean, I don't know why she's still
I'm
going.
I'm holding back.
She's
bedrooms are a wonderful thing.
Yeah. There you go. So, Tessa, from just outside Glinton, not specifically Glinton now, you have now moved to what part of the world?
Deep in St. Nicholas, which is sort of the Deeping.
The Deeping.
I thought we were on about Father Christmas then for a second.
I know. That's why I said
don't even go there, Ben. Not this time of the evening, because really it's just an outrageous slur on all sorts of aspects, which I'm not even going to pursue. If you want to play it back on the podcast, then you do so at your own risk. So in terms, Tessa, of the next Sound and Country Vision, because actually when Beverly was talking to me about coming on the show, because I've made it, I think, a general announcement saying, did people want to sit on the show, etc., how did you come to be with us tonight, Beverly?
Quite a few people have told me to have a little go.
A little go?
A little go. Yes.
on this specific show? I mean, obviously, Ben is now going to be in hysterics for the rest of the evening, so it's all right. But he pulled himself together. That's the important thing. Yeah, exactly. So you're having a little go, which is nice. And how has that been, then, over the last hour and 38 minutes? Has it been good?
Very interesting, yes. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, the reason I sort of mentioned it, Tessa, was quite simply, yeah. Beverly also said she was mostly into music, and I was thinking, you know, she'd be music-based shows is more the kind of production that you actually put together, really, in terms of music.
So, okay.
Yeah. So whereas this one is...
You'll have to join us on
Town
and Country Vision.
Mm. Yeah. Do you have a particular genre, or would you sort of say...
Every genre.
Every.
Because, yeah, I've danced for many years. So music's
I'm
a huge
almost
part
thinking
of that.
You could conceivably also put together a double act with Tessa's mum as well. It should be extraordinary.
Yeah. Oh, that would be good.
Exactly. See, I'm casting things together here, Tessa. It's an ongoing side of sisters. Also in the studio, you may recall, we've got Kira Allsbrook.
Hello.
Oh, hi, Kira.
Hi.
Everybody thinks because she's small. She's not there. She's there. Of course she's there.
Just much more voice.
Exactly. And we also have Bethany Gulliver. Or Beth. Do you prefer Beth or B?
Beth is probably better, please.
Hi, Beth.
Bethany, who almost, though she didn't realise it at the time, almost was collaborating with Kira and Ben over a project which in the end basically just went to Bethany over with respect to an event at LALT recently, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
I know. It's a strange world. There we are. Yes, it's okay. It just was a classic case of the institution sometimes having challenges. I think it's fair to say, Ben.
Yeah.
So, anyway, what would you like to say, Tessa? Who would you like to say it to? What would you like to talk about? You heard a bit of the poetry, you've heard some of the sort of production, etc. I wasn't even sure whether you actually had internet connection as yet, really. So.
Well, I was actually really worried that you wouldn't get through. We currently have no Wi-Fi. We are quite rural, and we're waiting to get that Wi-Fi set up and sorted. Dad's in the process of doing it now.
Mm-hmm.
But you got through, so that's really, really good, and it's a really clear line. Mm. So.
Well, what more could we ask for, really? We tried telepathy, smoke signals, and a carrier pigeon, but none of those really were suitable for radios. No, we didn't, actually.
Oh, no. Well, that's our backup if it does go wrong.
Is it? Do you think so? Have you used a fax machine?
No, actually. No.
Exactly. No. Yeah, in fact, I'm probably the only person. Beverly, have you ever used a fax machine?
Oh, yes. Once upon a time.
Yeah. Bethany, fax?
No.
No. And Kira?
No. I've used a typewriter. I mean, it's kind of different, but...
One finger, two fingers, or the whole sort of shebang?
Two.
Two.
The little ding at the end of it.
Ding. It's a whole new world. Anyway, Tessa, it is your part of the programme. It's your time where you step in to fill Leonis's shoes present. And it's up to you to effectively...
Big shoes to fill!
Hey!
What would you like to actually guide us through on, Tessa, on this particular virtual? Just to give you a heads up and a reminder, of course, launched with Anna Lewis from the A&E department of a London hospital. Eva MacDonald, in case you're wondering, is poorly. I don't know if you want to wish her best wishes, because she did say she'd be listening. We gave her a thumbs up at the start of the programme. But her official line, if I pull up her message that she actually sent to me about an hour or so ago, went something as follows, the system has obviously sort of decided to let us down. I'll let you know in the course of the whole thing. Anyway, we worked through Dr. Corinne Taylor-Smith with the Tigers Forever, Arthur Weingarten. We just got his answer phone, which is most unusual. I think he actually given up waiting for your book to actually return, but never mind, that's not.
Oh, well, he's now packed away in a box.
Yeah, well, there we are. Yeah. Anyway, Eva's line, sadly I can't make it to the radio this evening, is I'm under the weather. I hope you have a good show. No. I shall be listening.
Well, Eva, get well soon.
Thank you. And, of course, Archhades, plus, of course, various random souls, including Joe Wicks and Charlotte Sterling Green. And we've just heard, of course, news of our expert soul when it comes to where you can locate men and women in the country. Mm. Where do you want to go?
That last segment, I thought that was quite interesting.
Mm.
Sort of meeting men and women and, obviously, technology.
Mm.
I guess if it's... I don't know.
It's all about the numbers.
What do you guys think? Do you think that we should use technology now, or do you think we should get out and about and meet people? I think maybe if technology is used in a good way and people are lonely, I think maybe it could be a positive thing.
Well, I mean, personally, as you know, Tessa, without Spike as my constant companion when it comes to location reports, I'm just not worth the human being, really, from that point of view. But anyway, Ben.
Technology can work to a certain extent, I'd say, but I think there's very careful lines with how people actually are compared to how people perceive themselves to be. But then also, along those lines, I think it's, for me personally, it's not something I like to do or use or... For me, I prefer the personal experience and being sort of one-to-one interaction.
I gave you the chance of actually sitting behind that computer screen and not looking at me directly in the eye through the entire programme.
And honestly, I suffered, Alex. I really did.
Okay. Bethany, as somebody who's gone through the whole... agonies of the virtual reality, the computers, the robots, the machines. I'm talking about a third year science fiction module, obviously. What are your comments on Tessa's view there?
See,
I like technology. I think it's a really positive sort of influence on our lives. But at the same time, I think when it comes to sort of romance, it always seems a little bit forced with the dating apps and things. Oh. But then again, like, that's just me saying that. And obviously, I do know people that have met people online or dating apps or whatever, and they've gone on to have, like, really happy, long relationships. So,
what about if you fall in love with the dating app? You know, you actually want to have a relationship with the actual operating system.
There was a film on that. It was called Her.
Yes.
And I'm sure you've seen it. Spike Jones was the...
And Scarlett Johansson as the voice.
Scarlett Johansson. Oh. And it was... he fell in love with his OS system.
Everybody's OS system. It turned out
the same OS system loved, I think, 2,000 other people.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So it didn't end very well. It was a very interesting film, though. It was a very strange ending, but it made you think a lot, actually, I'd say.
Could happen.
Very good film.
Kira, is this hurting your brain, or is it just a case of...
No, I'm just sat here, you know, trying to take it all in.
Fantastic. But... Did you have a good birthday?
Yes, it was very good.
I had
a lovely meal.
Good. We'd like to hear that.
Oh, when was Kira's birthday?
Fortnight ago. She turned down the chance of being on the show because her grandparents came down from Scotland and
I can't say no to them. I'll get tortured.
How resentful, Alex.
He's not bitter at all.
I would have brought them in, you know.
Do take birthdays seriously. I mean, my grandparents do. I always have to be there. They always have to be here. It's always a big thing.
It's a tradition in my family. It's really weird.
Yep. I can understand that.
So, you know, it wasn't as though they were doing something extra special glamorous like doing bingo.
Stop! Bingo. I should have been here. Stop the meal.
And Beverly, the views on the number crunching sort of scenario, etc. Do you feel actually romance is all about the numbers?
No, absolutely not. I am with Ben on this. You've got to go out and see somebody, really, haven't you?
It's always worked in the past. I don't, why change something that's not broken?
Really? Yeah, I think I'd agree as well.
Yeah.
Especially that, have you seen that programme Catfish?
Yes.
Fake profiles and all that goes on.
Oh, yeah.
So I think some people maybe take it too far or they don't want to show their true identity, which I think is really, really, really upsetting. And I think... Again,
and also full of potential lies and upsets for the future sort of relationship, really.
Exactly. Yeah.
Very weak foundation. So, Tessa, what's going to be the format of the Christmas special for Sound and Country Vision? What's going to be featured on that particular routine? Because it's going to be quite late when you actually deliver that, and I'm not sure as yet, even though next week we're actually doing the Christmas special, which is a non-Christmas special with Nick Elliott in terms of his musical sort of output, what you're going to actually do as far as Sound and Country Vision is actually concerned.
Well, Nick from Sound and Nick's Vision is joining us on the show, so it's going to kind of be, he's confirmed.
He's going to be there.
He is going to be
there. Good heavens.
He sent me through his, I asked him to send me through some of his favourite tracks. Some of them aren't actually Christmas songs.
Surely none is the actual word when it comes to Nick Elliott.
Well, I didn't realise that he wasn't a fan of Christmas music.
When you say fan, I mean, basically he's like... pre-Dream Scrooge when it comes to Christmas, basically.
Yeah, that's our...
He's the Grinch. He's like a living Grinch from Norfolk, basically.
Okay, so we're going to incorporate a bit of the Grinch, a bit of Scrooge with Nick on the show.
Right. This could end in disaster. You realise that, Tessa? I mean, are we looking for 2 hours? Oh, yeah, okay, fair enough.
It's a bit of a Christmas twist. But anyway, it's going to be sort of a country rock special. And he has got some ties with the Christmas songs. There is one in there.
Is that a darkness again?
It wasn't darkness. Oh. I can't remember now who it was, but it's not darkness. I thought I would get one of those tracks, but I didn't. They're not even on the list.
Mm.
There's an Eagles number on there, but it's not a Christmas song.
No.
So really, I'm going to probably have most of the Christmas tunes played.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. It's kind of like, really, you're the light to his kind of satanic dark, isn't it, really? That's the sort of line we've got there. Yeah.
We've got a contrast going on.
Okay.
I'm still planning what we're going to have on. I'm hoping for a Christmas quiz. I might throw a Christmas quiz in there.
Yeah.
Still planning ahead. But
you can offer it to your fellow midweek drivers. They might have one or two suggestions to make. What would they like to have? I mean, Beverly, what would you like on a Christmas show?
Yeah.
What would be your ideal content?
I'm open to suggestions.
Fun.
Yes, the main objective.
Fun.
Beverly?
Yeah.
She's called me Beverly again.
Sorry, no, Bethany. Bethany. Yeah, exactly. I don't know, Bethany. Yes.
What was the question, sorry?
Sometimes, exactly. What would you like Tessa to possibly think about including on her Christmas show, on her Christmas special?
Just everything Christmassy. Nothing is out of the question when it comes to Christmas.
Right, okay.
Maybe, I've just had a thought, maybe I should invite Tom back from the great British,
the Great British Website.
The Great British Website, that's it. And he's always got a lot of Christmas goodies
always.
In terms of food on there. So maybe we can have a segment with him.
Yeah, it's like the production meeting live on air. Kira?
Live on air, I know.
I think you should do something to a karaoke. Not necessarily
please, Lord, not karaoke.
It's fun. And you should all dress up in the studio as well and come in a fancy dress. Snowman, reindeer, Santa.
Yeah, we'd have to video the show as well.
Live show on Facebook.
Well, I mean, once again, Kira has just taken us to a whole new level. It's just outrageous.
That is good. I like that.
I noticed you've also liked Phil Lynas's latest update with him being on stage this past Thursday introducing his movie The Lady Killers with a reminder that effectively his Goodbye 40s, Hello 50s show, variety show set during New Year's Eve 1949 with all proceeds benefiting the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, which is what he's actually rehearsing at this particular moment in time. So we'll see what actually happens because, as you said, get tickets at the EncoreSundays.eventbrite.com. Get a jet to fly over to Los Angeles, obviously, and help Phil Lynas celebrate his birthday.
Do they have breakfast in this breakfast club?
Yes.
They actually eat
it is the Ham and Eggs Club.
A bit like, I don't know, do they sit and do they make a new thing each time? So scrambled eggs and toast one week?
No, it's fairly standard. Ham and eggs, usually, that's it, for all vegetarian alternatives.
Poached eggs for never and... full English.
You must listen to the podcast. Every month he produces a podcast from the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. It goes all the way back to the 1920s when the Hollywood movers and shakers would actually get together and have breakfast meetings and so on. So it's called an August history as opposed to a February history or other month, but we had that early in the show. Tessa, have you found this of some use?
Have I found?
This whole thing is some use. Or is it just a case of, you know, 3 years you spent as an undergraduate reading journalism, you've graduated with a first class honours now, and frankly, you're still looking for the meaning of life.
I think
it's a bit harsh.
Being on the radio always gives me a bit of a meaning of life. It's good to have a chat. I like a good chat.
Well, that's the important thing.
Talk,
so, Tessa, whom would you like to ask the last two questions to for yourself? Basically, you need to choose. Will it be Kira? Will it be Bethany? Will it be Beverly? Will it be Ben? It's BBBK.
It's really confusing.
I think they should all say it in sync.
Oh, please.
We've never tried.
You insane girl?
I mean, goodness. Two of them say the first question, and then another two announce the second. We should try it.
So it's two duets. Okay, which duet would you like to ask the first question then? It's not going to work. It's never going to work.
Let's go with...
Never work.
No, you pick for me.
I'm not going to pick for you. You've got BBBK, Ben, Bethany.
Okay.
B cubed.
Right, let's put a B and B together. Let's go Ben and Bethany.
Right. Okay, you've got to ask
Exactly.
It's almost as though she has the third eye. Would you like to put those last two questions to Tessa, please?
Tessa?
No, together.
Oh, God.
Together, three?
Do you want to work on it? It's a script, basically, which says, okay. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us? That's it, really. I mean, nothing too difficult. Fairly straightforward. Right, off you go. Three, two, one.
Have you had an interesting, really good interesting telephonic link with us?
I told you it was going to end in carnage, Tessa.
I think that was a pretty good attempt, and after that, I might definitely have.
Yeah, good. Okay, let's move on. Otherwise, we lose the will to live. The joy of Kira...
Take the easier question.
Kira and Beverly have, the very tough words, will you return? All right, three words.
I think they can manage
that. We should be good for this. So, after three, one, two, three.
Will you return?
See,
we
did it. So,
so long as you'll have me back.
Well, it's like high fives all around. It's fantastic. It's like,
that was really good. Well done.
So, yes, it's almost as though we had fist bumps in the studio. But we wouldn't, and obviously don't, for obvious reasons. It's just not good there. Anna Lewis, William Coles, Dr. Corinne Taylor, Smith, Arch Hades, Tessa Snart, thank you for being part of the whole production. Thanks to Natalie Early from the events team, Beverly Spencer, Bethany Gulliver, Kira Olsbrook and Ben Lewis. Thank you, dear listener, for actually connecting with us for this whole system. Ben, you're back in the morning, aren't you?
Oh, of course.
With Ellie Sample, who's head of communications at this very university, that is the University of Lincoln, the host of Siren Radio. Rory McGowan makes his debut on The Breakfast Show. So does Abigail LeMay, who last week, of course, slept in, missed the show, missed the first seminar. Very, but she'll be back with us. She's from Canada. We've also got Emma Street with us as well, as the aforementioned team who'll be lining up. That's it. We're pretty much out of here now. We're out of time and out of all sorts of other bits and pieces. So, Tessa, what phrase would you'd like to wrap up with? Happy November? Happy November the 21st? I mean, you could say anything really at this stage. Take us away, Tessa. You are head girl. You have that power.
Oh, goodness. Well, let's say happy November, because we're nearly at the end now. So let's go out with that.
Well, let's go with that. A one, two, three. Happy November. Yeah, you can see the team was just so, it's like,
it.
It's
I
a crap thing.
Happy November.
Happy November,
okay. Right, okay. Give it a crack.
Sometimes you get the blood, you get the stone, you get the stone, you get the blood. A one, two, three.
Happy November.
And hey, I'll run and see you on Sunday, 'cause I'm 21.